Welcome to Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. Talk about stuff that's messing with your head and crazy stuff that's happening in the bed. Why? Because many church folks are falling into darkness, and the Bible calls us to walk as children of light. The Bible says, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time, because the days are evil. Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, the Ghostbusters, the radio show that talks about strange things in the neighborhood and weird stuff that don't look good. And ladies and gentlemen, all this week we've been taking a look back at the past. We've been looking at segregation back in the 1960s. And today I want to look at Mississippi, because Mississippi was one of the worst states in the Union when it came to race relationships between blacks and whites back in the day. As we continue to celebrate black history, in order to go forward, we gotta understand our past. So get close to your radio and listen.
I feel we have left the United States for a foreign land. The speaker was a young Negro riding a bus into Mississippi. Jackson, Mississippi. The battle lines are drawn, the defenses complete. The bus station, dwarfed by the downtown skyscrapers of Jackson, is guarded outwardly by the entire police force of the city. There are others around the corner, plainclothes deputies wait. Just out of sight, troops are standing, the hot southern sun glinting on their fixed bayonets. For Jackson, Mississippi, the enemy is at the gates. The hour has come. The invaders are 14 Negro and white passengers on an inbound bus. They are vastly outnumbered, even by the reporters covering their journey. The armed might at the bus station waits not to fight, but to protect them from the white population. For unlike Montgomery, Alabama, Jackson, Mississippi has decided that by protecting them, they will also defeat them. But everyone, the police, the troops, the town, knows that the riders are only a symbol. The real invader is integration, and he has been long on the road to Mississippi. Other states have vowed to integration, either partially or completely, but not Mississippi, not until now. What happened to bring these two forces together in a bus station, and why Jackson? Well, to find the answers, you must understand first something of the city and its people. The capital of Mississippi is a place where the past has full partnership with the present. Downtown Jackson is dominated by the old capitol, built in 1833, where the voices of Henry Clay and Andrew Jackson once rang. Confederate memorials are real symbols not only of a century-old conflict, but of a present-day conflict, too. Downtown Jackson looks like any normal busy town, but people remind you that it was once called Chimneyville because burned out chimneys were all that was left after federal troops went through. If you want to know how integration has been held outside Mississippi for this long, you must first call on the Citizens Council, an organization dedicated to states' rights and racial integrity. Support comes from Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and 85,000 living white citizens of Mississippi. The overwhelming political power of the council is well demonstrated by the fact that it is partially supported by state taxes. William Simmons is secretary of the Jackson Citizens Council, editor of its newspaper, and president of its forum, which produced radio and television programs attacking the advance of integration.
The South has a large Negro population. In our state, it's about 42% of the total. And anyone with two eyes in his head and with roughly normal vision can look around him and see that there is a vast and permanent difference between the white and colored people. That is, Abraham Lincoln so wisely said a number of years ago, would forever prohibit them from living on terms of equality in the same society. That, just in a nutshell, is the reason.
How do you, as a Southerner, justify your position in that here is a Negro citizen, he pays taxes, and sometimes he votes, and he's a citizen? How do you justify feeling that he is not, in the eyes of the law and in the eyes of everything that we know of as American and democratic, that he is not your equal?
Well, I don't know the equality in the... I'm really not sure how you mean equal.
Well, I mean equal in every sense of the word.
Well, equality in every sense of the word is obviously a myth. There are no people who are equal, no two people. There are no two races who are equal. They have different qualities, and this is an objective matter that can be determined by objective standards. As far as the more subjective aspects of equality go, we believe in equality before the law for all people. This is something that's quite distinct from individual talent or capacity or accomplishment. I think they're really two separate things.
Well, let's get down to basics. The separate restrooms, the separate lunch counters, things of this type, the separate schools. How do you justify this if you think of him as an American citizen like you are?
Well, I don't see it as any special connection. Why should the Negro feel any more discriminated against than the white man for associating with his own kind? White people who are segregated don't seem to resent it, and I don't think most Negroes resent it. They seem to prefer that.
They do seem to prefer that. Outwardly, they have shown little interest in the battle against integration. There were no Mississippi Negroes among the Freedom Riders. Jackson Negro College students have attempted to use the white library, but even this drew no positive support from the rest of the Negro community. But it is difficult to say what they think, for they have no voice. The nearest to a Negro voice in Jackson is Medgar Evers, for 7 years local secretary of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Just how many Negroes Evers speaks for is open to question, but certainly the majority are not NAACP members.
Well, there are many reasons, why we have not had, the aggressiveness that they've had in Alabama and some of the other areas. One of the reasons is that many of the leaders that have come on the scene have decided to leave and go north and other places, and we are constantly building new leadership here in the state. We feel now that we have gotten to the point that the leadership has become stabilized, and it's a matter now of developing it and refining it. Certainly, there has not been the aggressiveness on the part of Negroes as has been in other states, but this is coming into the fore now, especially with the younger people.
There appears to be a lack of leadership among the Negroes. And openly, at least, they have not asked for leadership. But leadership is on the way, if not from the ranks of Mississippi Negroes, then from elsewhere. One of them is Charles Oldham, National Chairman of the Congress of Racial Equality, known as CORE. CORE is the sponsor of the Freedom Riders and Oldham their spokesman in Mississippi.
The ultimate goal of our organization is the elimination of discrimination against individuals because of race or color. And this is what we are going to do for America. We feel it is essential for our own welfare and for the welfare of the citizens of the United States, and so that this is our purpose, and we will continue until it is accomplished.
Against this charged background, the issue came to a head. A bus carrying a mixed group of whites and Negroes started across the South with the announced intention of testing segregation in bus terminals, which had been ruled out by the U.S. Supreme Court. The bus was attacked in Alabama, its passengers injured. Next stop, Jackson. Mississippi had observed Alabama's handling of the riders and decided upon another course. The bus was loaded with armed troops and followed by 16 patrol cars and an airplane. All this at a cost of thousands of dollars a day. Jackson citizens watched by the hundreds, jostling each other for a better view. Swamped by the Khrushchev-like protection, the Freedom Riders stepped off the bus, some still bearing the bandages of their encounter with Alabama. They made their way through the surrounding crowd to the inside of the station. Some walked to a restroom marked white only, others to the white only coffee shop. A policeman ordered them to move on. They stood quietly. Another order, then each was arrested and led outside to a waiting paddy wagon. There was no official mention of segregation or integration. The charges were breach of the peace and inciting to riot. The trial was short. The sentence, a $200 fine, which was suspended. The suspension was refused, and the riders elected to work it out on the county jail farm. Observing Alabama teeming with federal marshals, Mississippi had devised a new method of handling the buses on their way.
They're showing all of these squad cars. You got about 16 police cars, and you got federal marshals getting off the bus ahead of the black students. And you can see this, some of the black students still got bandages all in their head when they beat them up there in Alabama. So Mississippi, they're trying to make sure that they didn't have the repeat of what happened in Alabama. And you got all of these news reporters just trying to get a picture of these freedom riders, these black freedom riders. You got cameramen with their picture cameras standing up on tables and stuff to try to get a picture of these blacks, and they're putting them in paddy wagons and stuff like that. And these paddy wagons, you know, they just a big station wagon, like about the size of a Suburban. Yeah. It's really a shame. That was real big news, and at that time the bus station was the Trailway bus station. We got another big Greyhound bus coming in here. and the same, you have a repeat. And you got the cameras, people, I mean, they are just running around as if these blacks are like they ain't never seen black people before. You got so many police, it look like they brought the whole police force down there. And then you got some white citizens, they are standing outside the bus station, and they are here looking through the windows. They want to just get a picture of these blacks. And they loading them up again on the paddy wagon. It's a shame, ladies and gentlemen, how they just packing them in this paddy wagon. And this police in here, he come with a padlock. He gonna padlock it. Now what is that thing turn over?
The Mississippians are beginning to feel, but I know the press has just about had enough. When is this invasion going to stop?
I think the invasion will continue for some time. I don't like to use the term invasion. I think the Freedom Rides will continue. The purpose of the Freedom Rides is to protest the practices of discrimination that exist against interstate travel, and they will continue until there's been some change of policy on the part of the Mississippi police and the law enforcement agencies.
Now, it seems to me that they're merely coming in, they're being placed in jail, and I see no reaction from Mississippi officials that they're going to change anything. How do you think you're going to change this?
Well, the more people that come in, the more people that make a protest against their policies, if you continue this thing, and it builds up to the point where they have some 500 or 1,000 people in jail, until the jails are full, then they will have to do something. You have to remember that the Freedom Riders, that the only crimes they have committed is for the Negroes to go to a white waiting room. They've gone in a white waiting room, been there about a minute and a half, they're hustled out the other side, put in the paddy wagon, taken to jail. And if you have 500 or 600 or 1,000 people that come to Mississippi and receive this treatment, I think that Mississippi is going to have to change.
But change is not Mississippi's strong suit, at least when the change involves such traditional institutions as segregation and white supremacy. No political leader dares offer change as one of the alternatives to the present situation. In fact, no political leader offers any alternatives. Governor Ross Barnett sets the tone, status quo.
Honorable Robert Kennedy, United States Attorney General, day before yesterday, that Mississippi was not asking for troops. We were not asking for marshals, that in fact we didn't need any marshals and we didn't need any troops in Mississippi, that we didn't want them. Yeah, because simply we knew, we felt confident that the officers and the people could certainly handle the situation well, and they did a wonderful job. And I had every confidence that all Mississippians would conduct themselves properly, even in the face of attempts to violate the laws, the solemn laws that appear on our statute books.
I think they did a real nice job of handling. I think we like the way we are in Mississippi. We don't want to change. We want white people to be together and colored people together.
Oh, I think it was fine. I think our Mississippi did fine, yes.
How do you feel generally about the Freedom Riders and groups like that coming through Mississippi?
I think they're just asking for trouble.
Well, I think they should have stayed where they was at and just trying to stir up trouble, that's all it is. They should have stayed where they belong. I think they did a good job, and I believe that
if the people, the public, would let the police force handle the situation, I believe that in Mississippi, integration would not be immediate.
Fine. I thought it was real good.
I do, too.
What do you think about the Freedom Riders in general about coming to Mississippi? How do you react to this?
I don't like it.
Why not?
Well, I just don't think it's right. If there ain't people in Mississippi ready for that, then they'll say they are.
You agree in this?
I think that we were better off before it started.
Well, we all think it was pretty good. I mean, there wasn't much trouble. You know, they just come in and they just shipped them right out as soon as they started trouble.
How do you feel about the Freedom Riders coming to Mississippi in the first place?
Well, I don't think none of us like it. I mean, I just think we ought to have open season on all of them.
What do you mean by open season?
Well, just to chase them all out.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's not going to last too long before the people down here get a little antagonized with it, and they're going to take it into their own hands, I mean.
On the night of the trials, Negro leaders called a mass meeting at the Masonic Lodge, conveniently located on Lynch Street. 126 persons attended, demonstrating again the lukewarm Negro support. Of course, it should be noted that no Jackson newspaper, radio, or television station will carry any mention of Negro meetings, leaving the leaders no way of reaching their followers. Many Negroes also fear reprisals, economic or otherwise, if they attend.
Hell, if they'd been in the sea, they would have been covered by sea. And I'm of the opinion that they had sent something along to clear the land of all landmines just because a few freedom-loving people are seeking their constitutional rights. You must be a special people. But we would like to warn America of this and the rest of the world. The American Negro, the Negro in Mississippi, will never be satisfied until we enjoy every right that's afforded any other citizen of these United States. Regardless to the laws passed by the state legislature, and enforced by the governor of this state, they can no longer hold back civil rights than you can hold back a tidal wave by hand.
The question has been asked, when is this going to end? Tonight we're telling you, it is when we get what the Constitution says we are entitled to have, our civil rights.
Mississippi, all of you know that your tax dollar and mine is taken from us, not because we give it willingly, but it's taken from us unwillingly, and it's given to the Citizens Council, it's given to the Sovereignty Commission at the rate of $4,500 a month. And why is it given? And why is it given? This money is given to keep you and I second-class citizens here in this great country. Why do I say that? I say it because you and I are helping to pay, to maintain, pay for the maintenance of segregation, helping to pay to keep my three children and the other children who are home, who hope one day to grow up in a democracy, free from strife, free from discrimination, free from segregation. But still, we have to bear the burden of the ideology, of the belief of this man who says that he believes in segregation. Well, now, if he believes so much in segregation, why doesn't he finance the segregation voluntarily as we are going to finance our fight for first-class citizenship from each one of our pockets here tonight?
The 126 Negroes gave freely as the collection plates were passed, though they were well aware that they were hardly likely to match the fundraising abilities of their opponents in the citizens' councils. But all coffers have a bottom, even those of the sovereign state of Mississippi. We asked Governor Ross Barnett how long the state was prepared to finance the fight against integration.
As I said a while ago, we'll have to cross that bridge when we meet it, when we get to it. We can't anticipate that people are going to continue to violate the law. We presume that people will begin to control their mental and their physical faculties in such a manner and way that they'll have respect for laws of the various states when they enter those states. When these freedom riders go to Ohio or go to Oregon, they ought to obey the laws of those states. I don't know what it's going to cost, and it is a great burden, I'll admit that. For the people to have to bend their backs to pay taxes to support people who are willfully intending to violate the law and to stir up strife. Now, that's the thing about it. When we know they come here for the sole purpose of creating riots, and when they come here and think they're coming here to create riots and bring about violence, I think when they go away and find that we are a good law-abiding state, I expect some of them are disappointed that they didn't cause a lot of trouble.
Now, standing around and talking to people, and some of the law officials, I hear comments like, well, when we put them to picking peas out here on the county farm, they'll stop this stuff. Now, what do you think's going to happen if they do put them to picking peas?
I think they came down here expecting to pick peas and expecting to work on the road gangs and expecting to chop cotton or whatever else the local officials decide that they should do while they are in jail. And I think that this will make very little difference.
Do you think that integration will ever be accepted, say, in Mississippi?
Yes, I think it'll be accepted. I don't know just how long, but I think it will be accepted. And I feel that once it is accepted, that there's going to be more genuine acceptance on the part of both Negro and white in the South and in Mississippi because of the fact that we've lived together here for these many years. Than you would find, say, in the northern cities where there is so much dissension.
Now, how long do you think the state's right theory can hold up against the federal idea and against the federal government?
That's a good question. As with most broad questions of that nature, it would depend on the dynamic personalities who become involved in each. There's, of course, in human affairs, a large question of leadership. And I believe, as Thomas Carlyle said many years ago, that the so-called great man theory of politics is still true. I think the ultimate result of this conflict of authority between federal and state sovereignty is something that has not been resolved. Of course, at the present time, the trend has all been towards centralization of power in Washington. But I see, as we get around the country, increasing evidence that people, not only in the South, but in many, many states, are becoming very concerned about the consequences to themselves of the growth of big government.
Everyone expected Mississippi to mob the Freedom Riders with at least as much viciousness as displayed in Montgomery. Of course, the world now knows this did not happen. The obvious answer is it did not happen because the Negroes were surrounded by troops and police. But that is only one part of the answer. A deeper reason is that the class of Mississippians who could have caused violence have a strong belief in their leadership, while the same class of Alabamans do not. Some of this goes back to the Democratic Convention, where Alabama's governor supported Kennedy and compromised their segregation stand. Mississippi's delegation held out to the bitter end, even sending in their own candidates. Mississippi whites, in their racial bitterness, approved, and they followed where their leaders led. Should these leaders falter, if in the future they should appear to be losing the fight against integration, and some outside the state believe, of course, this is inevitable, then Mississippi will seek other means of dealing with its problem. There are no alternatives. Some states may have moderate opinions or groups of citizens for compromise, but not Mississippi, USA.
All right. That was a documentary about Mississippi back in the 1960s. All right. That's it for today. Thank you so kindly for joining us. Listen to us all day long because we're in your corner right here on Ghostbusters.